Welcome to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio about to commence.
Good morning, North State. This is Bruce Ross. I am guest hosting for Carl and Linda this morning. Linda called me up last week and asked if I would be interested in filling in. I tried to say no, but I have a soft spot. Carl and Linda are at an undisclosed location this morning. So I'll be here for the next 2 hours. We've got some great guests coming up in later in the show. First off, though, just a lot going on in the world. I, of course, just to fill you in, I'm Bruce Ross. I'm the editorial page editor of the Record Searchlight blog, along with Carl at Redding.com, and Mark Beecham, of course, a regular guest host around here. A lot going on in the world, of course.
Take a deep breath. It's
Take
okay. Nobody's going to...
I told you about during
the briefing. Nobody's going to die. Good
Bob
morning.
Bob said nobody's going to die. You know, I haven't... I've dabbled in radio over the years, but it's been a few years since I've been alone before the microphone. It's a grim, grim moment. I think I might end up reading the classified ads at some point, Bob. But.
Well, let me tell you, after 30 years, the terror never stops. So, you know, just you move right along. And let me ask you a question, kind of get you started. Are you a native, or what brought you to Reading?
What, am I a native? No, my daughter's a native, though. I just realized that the other day. Somebody said, how long have you been here? I said, well, you know, I'm not from here, but my kid is. No, I've been here since 1997. You know, Tom King, old editor of the newspaper, gave me a job, and I tried to leave once, and he offered me another job. And then I did leave again, and he offered me another job, so I've been sticking around. You know, haven't had that itch to leave, because, you know, Reading's a nice place.
Compared to many other places, this is
I've had this, you know, where do I need to be instead? And no place has screamed at me to pick up and go there instead. So far, it's been nice. You know, of course, Reading's having some difficult times. We report about that entirely too much in the Record Searchlight lately, because it's just the times. You know, somebody asked me just before the show, they said, are you going to talk about the REU lawsuit? Sure, you know, that's an interesting one. It was supposed to be in court. For those of you who haven't heard, a group, Walt McNeil, who happens to be, he's the lawyer for the Record Searchlight, though he's not representing us, and he has, like lots of lawyers, he has lots of clients, but we do know that he's a pretty good lawyer. He, on behalf of some plaintiffs, has sued Reading Electric Utility. Basically, the idea is that some money that they transfer to the city's general fund to pay for day-to-day operations violates Proposition 26, which was passed in November. Basically, it's a tax that hasn't been approved by the voters. You know, that's an interesting... it's a very interesting case. It's about $6 million, which would be, at this point, about another 12% of the city's budget, you know, which they've already been cutting a lot these past few years. So if they were to win on that, if the plaintiffs were to win, it would be a pretty devastating blow to City Hall. You know, that was supposed to be in court on Monday. The judge, it was Stephen Baker, ended up saying, recusing from the case, apparently had some kind of ties to someone or something. You never really know why a judge recuses. So that'll be dragging out. I suppose, you know, it's probably in the city's interest to kind of drag that out for a while, because, you know, who knows? It's a new initiative, the actual law, what it means and what the courts will find it means is going to be a pretty a drawn-out process. These things can take years, you know, a decade to finally settle out. One thing, though, that I've been wondering, we wrote about this in the paper, and I was talking about this with someone yesterday. You know, whether the plaintiffs are right in this case or not, you know, it's a matter of legal arguments, and judges are unpredictable. You never know exactly what the law will mean in at the end of the day. But what's certain is that if the city were to put it to a vote and say, hey, this is the status quo, we'd like you to ratify it because we think the money's well spent to keep our, you know, we'd have to close another fire station or two. You know, how's that going to work out for you? Just to ratify the status quo, not to do anything about it, but let's have a vote. Let's see what the people think. But that would show some respect for the city's voters, as opposed to just drag it out in court and potentially losing. And I'm real curious what any listeners might think about that, if that would be a smart thing for the city to do. So give us a call. Let's hear from you on the chat room. We're going to take a break to hear from some of our sponsors. Give us a ring after the give us a ring after that. Let's hear what you have to say.
605-4567, the call-in line. Also, you can check out the chat room, KCNR1460.com. It is 7:11 and 39 degrees. Full weather report coming up right after this on KCNR 1460. This is Free Fire Radio. 1460 and taking a look, KCNR 1460, and taking a look at the weather. Mostly sunny this morning. High today should be about 54 degrees this afternoon. Scattered showers and thunder showers overnight, though, 37. Right now, 39 outside. And the weather report always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards on the way up to Shingletown, Viola area. It's there on Inwood Road. Beautiful place. If you've not had a chance, please check it out there at Anselmo Vineyards. Bruce Ross is our guest host this morning, and during the break, Bruce, somebody asked about why don't newspapers and even television outlets...
And even radio,
yes, I get this a lot. Why don't you do pure investigative reporting, digging out all the dirt?
Time and money. I heard, I read just yesterday that there's a group of journalists, sort of old graybeard journalists from the San Francisco Bay Area, who are going to be doing a report, which is probably going to be of interest primarily to other journalists, about how the shakeout in the news market has affected the Bay Area over the past decade. And I think that they said the San Francisco Chronicle alone has gone from 575 newsroom staffers down to about 175. So cut by two-thirds. So, you know, you used to go back 10 years ago and you could pick up the Chronicle and, you know, you might not love everything in the paper, but, boy, they had a lot of stories and a lot of digging. And, you know, you get to page B13 and there'd be a great story out of, you know, some Bay Area suburb that was really an expose. Boy, you cut your staff that much. There's still 24 hours in a day and you got to sleep for, you know, at least six of them if you're a normal human being.
Now, you don't exactly look like Lou Grant, so... And I'm glad to see that. What does an editor do? There's a lot of confusion about that.
Editors do a lot of different things. You know, the editor is just, you know, he's the boss. I edit the opinion page, so I get all the mail, all the letters to the editor, op-eds. You know, they come to me first, and most of them, you know, if they're literate and well spelled and have a point, we'll usually publish them. But I also write the editorials for the newspaper almost every day, not every single one. But so I actually, you know, editing as opposed to reporting usually means you're stuck in the office, you know, dealing with the words and trying to keep the pipeline flowing. But I also get to do some writing, and you know, you got to juggle a lot.
One more question from the chat room. How much of our editorial decision making process remains in house, and how much is being dictated by somebody in another state?
100% remains in-house. The only thing, you know, people have always been asking that about, you know, we're owned by EW Scripps, which is they own about 12 or 13 newspapers around the country, mostly in Texas and back east, but also in California, the Ventura County Star. But, you know, the news decisions have always been made locally. The only thing, every once in a while you'll see, sometimes on a Sunday, you know, once every other month or every 3 months, there'll be a kind of an investigative package about some subject that'll be often with a story from Scripps Howard News Service. So they'll move those, and they'll often call us up and say, hey, do you want to report part of a local angle on this? And we'll always, you know, sometimes we'll just say, you know, this doesn't work for us. This has nothing to do. And often they're, you know, they are interesting packages, so we're happy to use them. But beyond that, nobody's telling us what to write and what to think. They don't care. I mean, nobody cares about Reading outside of people in Reading, right?
I know you've got quite a list there, but here's one more question. This is from me. How has the citizen journalist that the modern electronic age has brought about, how has that changed the business?
largely for the better. I think that for all that it's scrambling the media business and advertisings and audiences are being fractured more than ever before, so it's difficult to make businesses work the way they used to, and that's, I think, throughout the media. Generally, there's more information available to interested people online through thousands, millions of sources, more than any gaggle of reporters could collect. So,
one thing I do have a question, a problem with, though, is what I see as agenda-based journalism, as opposed to nobody human can be 100% objective all the time. But you try if you really take the business seriously. But so much of the private journalism, I'll call it, seems to be agenda-based. Would you agree with that?
Sure. Well, some people would always say, reporters always have their axes to grind. And you know, you try and be a professional and be fair, cover all sides. You know, most people who are, you know, working in their free time as a hobby, they're going to have a passion for one reason or another, whether it be strong political stances or what have you. But that is what motivates people. So, you know, whether when you're reading, you have to maybe read with a bit more skepticism mm-hmm. than you used to. If it's some website somewhere, okay, I saw this website. Well, where is this website coming from? You know, you do need to be a bit more skeptical and informed about your sources, but...
I don't mean to take over your... this is your show as guest host, but I wanted to kind of seed the clouds a little bit and pass along some of the things that were in the chat room for you.
Well, thank you, Bob.
And let your first cup of coffee take hold.
The first cup of coffee. Yeah. You know, I've had three or four already, so...
You're good to go. Let's take a quick break while we prepare for some guests.
Let's do that.
All righty. You're listening to KCNR 1460, and we'll be back right after this, 605-4567. 1460, the home of Free Fire Radio. This portion of the program brought to you by T&B Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. That's the place where you'll find the walk-in humidor. And, of course, Espresso Joe's. Head on in there, and you'll meet the T&B Sweeties. They are big supporters of the community. That is Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. And now, back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
Good morning. You know, the beautiful things are happening here at the studio. We're down here on Market Street, and I don't even know what's going on, because Carl gave me about two sentences of instructions. He said, show up. Bob will help you out. But it's an amazing thing. People are walking into the studio. We're here with Enterprise High School's Dan Neese and Cam and Abby, two very talented-looking students from the Starship program. They're not going to sing for us this morning. They did not come with their pipes prepared. But Mr. Neese, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Tell us about the show that's coming up.
Well, as you know, we were very fortunate March 5th to... do a showdown of show choirs in Hollywood, and that gave us the right to go into National Festival on April 30th. And so what we've done, we need to raise a lot of money to go into Indiana and perform for that competition. We need to raise some $20,000. So what we're preparing for right now is an encore performance that will be held at Sequoia Middle School, and we're trying to get the word out to everybody. The tickets are $20. We need to pack that house and make some money for the group.
That's a beautiful auditorium. How much? It was a whole about 500?
It was about six, about okay. 650. So, yeah, it's a gorgeous auditorium. We can't wait to get in there.
So tell us, okay, so this show, has it been performed in Reading?
Yeah, we normally in February we do our Starship Variety Hour.
Okay.
And we usually pack the house there. We do seven shows there. This show will be a little bit different. This is kind of a send-off and kind of a support for the kids, just to say, you know, we support what you're doing and good luck. It'll be a shorter show. It'll be about an hour. We're going to have a reception afterwards. And so you can meet the kids. It'll be kind of a meet and greet. And they're going to do their actual competition set that they won in Hollywood.
So you won... They won state...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was big... Big stuff.
There's five different
states.
There's some talented people in California.
Well, there were. We took the top scores for California groups. There was also five other states represented there. And so with that, the top three get the chance to go head-to-head with the best of the best. And what happens is that there's five of these competitions throughout the country, and the top three of each one of those get the right to go for the nation's top show choir. And that's what's being held in Indiana, so we're very excited about that.
So do you review tapes of other choirs? Do you...
You better
believe
it. Did you
scope out the competition?
Every day we've been looking at all that. We have a different show, though. Our show is, I think, a little more clean. We have a smaller group. There's usually like 80 in these show choirs, just a mass amount of people on the stage, and they're fabulous. These are very, very fine groups. But what attracted us to this is that we have a live band. And many times you go to these show choir festivals down south, and they use recorded backgrounds. And that's not what we do, you know. And so it's mandatory that you have a live band behind your group, and that really attracted us, and so that's why we got involved in the whole thing.
So between the musicians and the singers, you have how many
we
people?
Have 39 total. Okay. Yeah. And so, but our band sings as well, so that's a big factor. Mm-hmm. And so when we go into our ballad, the band actually comes down and joins the whole group, and they're singing.
Wow. Let's meet a couple of your performers here. We have Cam and Abby.
Yeah, Abby's our piano player in Starship. Welcome, Abby.
Say hello.
Thank you.
Lean in. You got to get a little close to these mics.
And Cam is one of our fine soloists.
Hello.
Hello. How long have you been musicians from day one? How did you get...
Well, I've been playing piano since I was about 7, so probably about 11 years, I guess.
And then I just recently got into singing and dancing. This will be my 4th year in Starship.
And you're making a spot. The rehearsals. How much time do you spend rehearsing in a given normal week?
In a week, we normally do like an hour after school, maybe some 2-hour sessions once or twice a week. So anywhere from 5 to 7 hours a week are put in.
And then are you practicing on top of that at home and
singing
in the car?
Yeah, always singing in the car, singing, watching other videos of the competition, just brushing up on what we know.
You guys, Mr. Nice at Enterprise, you guys have, your music program's long been locally famous and justifiably so. You do phenomenal things. One thing I'm wondering, it's not about the high school, but I'm seeing the cuts to music programs at Shasta College and some other stuff going on. Is this affecting high school music programs?
No. No, we are very fortunate in that our administration is very supportive. We have 2 music teachers at each school, and Foothill, Shasta has phenomenal programs. We're just very, very lucky where we're at, that our boards recognize the importance of music.
Glad to hear that. That doesn't mean they recognize it enough to be able to pay to go to Indiana. So tell us one more time about the show that's coming up.
Well, we are trying to raise $20,000.
And that is on April?
Yep, April 20th. We hope everybody will come out there to Sequoia Middle School, 7 o'clock.
Great show.
Fox News coming up, bottom of the hour. This is Free Fire Radio. 7:34 and Free Fire Radio continues now on KCNR 1460. This portion of the program brought to you by B&T Satellite, your dish network provider. Let me tell you, they're in their new location down there on Liberty Street, as right there where the Highway 44Y forms up. And Doug Tooley is more than just the guy who sold me my satellite system. He is a friend, has been for a long time, and he is a local provider. Don't call the 800 number. Let me say that again. Don't call the 800 number. You'll end up talking to somebody who's in a English as a second language situation who will send you a technician from who knows where. You want that service after the sale. You want to go with a local provider, B&T Satellite, and are on the web at readinghdtv.com. Right now, back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
And we're here this morning with Mr. Nice from Enterprise High School and 2 of his very talented performers from the Enterprise Starship, who are doing an encore presentation of their show. Help me out.
That's
help me
the Starship Variety Hour.
Okay, Starship Variety, and that's going to be on April 20th. What time is it?
That's 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, and it's going to be at the Sequoia Middle School McLaughlin Auditorium.
McLaughlin,
and it's $20?
Yep, $20.
And that includes a show and reception afterwards?
Yeah, reception afterwards.
Now, we were in the chat room here while we were talking earlier. We mentioned these budget cuts are on the front page of the paper today, and obviously it's a lot of talk. Haven't heard yet from Shasta High School that they're really retrenching as some districts might have to, but somebody asked, is the money spent on music education as opposed to science and math and English, is it worth the money?
Well, what you're not realizing that music is science, math, history, physical education. It's everything rolled into one. And it's been proven many, many times that students that are in music are also your top students in AP classes. And it gives you a discipline that you don't get anywhere else. It gives you confidence that you don't see anywhere else. You take, for example, a couple weeks ago, I went to a mock trial competition. All those kids were in music. And yeah. I'll tell you what, they got up on the stand and just blew everybody away. They are used to being on stage. They're used to the discipline of practice. And, well, I can ask my students here.
Cam and Allie, what do you think?
Well, I know it really does help with discipline and time management. Definitely does. I myself am in 4 AP classes this year, and it just helps with Starship trying to keep track of time, stay on top of things, and be disciplined.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree. I'm in 2 AP classes. I mean, they're hard enough by themselves, but with music on top of it, you just really learn how to manage your time and how to just keep on top of things.
Well, Abby used to be fairly shy. What has music done for you?
Well, now I've been able to come out of my shell. I've made so many friends thanks to music. It's great.
You're here now.
Yep.
Four AP classes plus Starship. Are you in other extracurricular activities too?
Just some other music programs. I have Starship and then the Vocal Jazz TBA and then our chamber choir. So it's mostly music for me this year, but it's all rolled into one there.
And Abby, are you juggling too?
Oh yeah, I'm in jazz and flute ensemble too, which is before school. So I'm at school most of my time.
You know, I don't know how young people do it. My life isn't quite that scheduled yet, but
I'll tell you, some of these kids are in 6 music classes, and they're still in some AP classes as well, and are doing remarkably well. And music is just their life, and that's how it is. But we'd be dead without them. They're fantastic musicians. They're good students, and you know, if you look at the models of Japan, everybody always looks to the Orient and looks to places where they think that they have better education. That they're all in music. Those mm-hmm. kids are in music. You go down south to Huntington Beach, you go to some of these programs that have huge string programs. All those kids are the brightest and best kids. You know.
Is it the discipline, or is it something about, does music shape your brain somehow?
Well, it certainly does. I mean, there's a lot of proof about that. But it's the whole aspect of discipline, I think, more than anything. And a love for an art and being with those that have a common goal. And,
It's a it's great to meet you guys. It's great to hear about the show coming up and get one more chance to see it. It's April 20th, 7:30 p.m. at McLaughlin Auditorium. And Danny's, tell us again the name of the show.
It's called the Encore Performance, Enterprise Starship.
And don't miss it. Great time to help see a great show and help these kids get to nationals in Indiana.
This has been a banner year. This is the group you want to see, and we've always had a very, very strong group. You can always depend on Starship for being there with a strong show, but this is an incredible year. We didn't know what to expect when we went into all this, but as long as we're going, let's do it.
Let's, you know. Absolutely. All right, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's 7:40 on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. E- 7:43 and 38 degrees, KCNR 1460. And now back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
Good morning. It continues to be a lively day here at the Market Street Studios of Free Fire Radio. Carl and Linda disappeared to an undisclosed location and tapped me to fill in for them this morning. We just had the great people from Enterprise High School one more time, April 20th at 7:30. They're having a great show at McLaughlin Auditorium. Their encore performance to help raise some money to send their very talented Starship kids to Indiana for the finals, national finals. They're having a great year. But now, they're gone, and who are here but Emily and Jan from the League of Women Voters. You guys were here a couple weeks ago on the show, 2 weeks ago, and you were talking about a forum on open government that was coming up. I was there. Tell me what your thoughts. What'd you learn?
Ah. the point that I thought was most important that came through right near the end of the forum, when we learned that when government privatizes certain responsibilities, that some of the freedom of information access to the private company does not take effect.
Mm-hmm.
And considering how here in Reading privatization, actually in many communities, privatization seems to be such a big issue, I think that those who are interested in open access to the government need to consider the fact that some information may no longer be available to them.
That is a very very important and very timely point. You know, the sometimes not when they're contracting out to do a service. You know, whether it's in the city, Haven Humane runs the, you know, they're the dog catchers, as well as all the other services they do. But and you don't really think about sometimes the reason you're saving money is that they don't have to comply with certain regulations like the Open Records Act.
Correct. Yeah. So that was important to me. In addition, I enjoyed the three speakers. They had diverse opinions, but they did not argue about it. They stated what they needed to state, and I felt that it was done quite well. I enjoyed the whole evening.
I did too. One thing, you guys at the League of Women Voters are always scrupulously fair. Whenever you're having a forum, usually it's with candidates, typically. I haven't mm-hmm. seen a lot of these kinds of debates just mm-hmm. about an issue. And I thought in this case it was almost a similar format to what you'll have for candidates, where you sort of, you know, pose questions from the audience, and you don't really get, sometimes I'd like to see people, you know, mm-hmm. maybe push back and forth a little bit. It might be interesting to see how people react.
Well, this is Jan speaking. Mm. The League of Women Voters does not do debates. We're an informational operation, and you know, different people have different information and different takes on it, so it's not always the same exact view from everybody. Mm. But we don't do crossfire. So if people want to see, you know, some sparks, they're going to need to go to somebody else's forum.
Right.
Our forums that are candidates' forums are really to educate the public and give them a chance to see how each candidate answers the same questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, all candidates would answer the same questions and have the same amount of time, similar to what we did at the informational forum, because we think that it's apples to apples instead of apples and oranges when everybody answers the same questions and has the same amount of time.
Sure. And it's like I said, when it's involving candidates, it's mm-hmm. You guys have a reputation for fairness and for mm-hmm. for dedicated to that really
right.
really shows. If anybody should have any questions, the phones are open, 605-4567. But tell us about, speaking of information for the public, you have, I'm looking at a copy of A Citizen's Guide to Local Governments in Shasta County. This is the 2009-10 edition. Tell me about the update to that and what's going on.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Since about 1989, the local league has been publishing a pamphlet called A Citizen's Guide to Local Governments in Shasta County. And we distribute 6,000 copies around the area, libraries, the city operations use it, county operations use it, local businesses use it. It's got all kinds of information in it.
The newspaper uses it.
The newspaper does use it.
It's got terms of office and ways to contact every elected official in Shasta County. It's got budget charts for everything that you can imagine. It's got information about the Superior Court and Anderson's Court. It's really just jam-packed full of stuff. It should be really kept with people's telephone books if they still use a telephone book. It's a good, good directory. Well, we've been publishing it on paper that was donated way back by Kimberly Clark.
By Kimberly, so that's, you've had a lot of, where were you storing it all this time?
Well, the McConnell Foundation has stored these pallets, these huge pallets of paper. The bad news is, or the possible bad news is, that we're out of paper, and we don't have the money to buy new paper.
Mm.
So I'm sorry to say that this issue might be the last citizen's guide that we publish locally, unless we can, you know, either get a good deal on some paper or a donation. So, at any rate, we still do have these. They're available in the public library. You can go to our website and contact us if anybody would like copies. And then there's some out here in the lobby of KCNR.
Well, we'll talk more, but first let's take a little break and hear from some of our sponsors.
7:50 on KCNR 1460, 39 degrees, a full weather report coming up right after this. This is the home of Free Fire Radio, KCNR, and you're listening to Free Fire Radio. Already said that, didn't I? Coming up on the weather, a few showers early today, thunder showers this afternoon, high should be around 56, and showers this evening, tapering off tomorrow, should be partly cloudy with a high of 62. Right now, 39 degrees, and back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
Bob, were you just reading the weather off your iPhone?
I was, in fact.
Apple is taking over the world. Even the weathermen are getting it off their
There's
their
an
apps.
App for that.
There
yes.
is an app for that.
I can read this. I can't read my own writing. So
we are here with Jan Logue and Emily
Davis
from the League of Women Voters. They're talking, well, we're talking about this, that, and the other thing. We're talking about their local Citizen's Guide to Local Government. My glasses aren't quite strong enough right now. 2009-2010 might be the last edition of this this guidebook to local government. You know, a lot of people, that's one of the things that people do ask. I'm the editorial page editor at the Record Searchlight by day. One of the things people ask all the time is really just for, not the news sometimes, but just for basic information. They're like, how much money does the city spend, and where does it go? Just give me a pie chart. And then I was, you know, thumbing through this. Indeed, you've got the pie chart. You know, this much goes. Here's the general fund. Here's the utilities. Here's the, you know, police and fire. And some of that, you know, it's amazing how much sometimes people just want to know that information. They never want to know it on April the 9th. So you put it in the paper that day, and then it's quickly forgotten. But this lets it be a desktop guide. You said, who uses this?
Oh, well, city governments, county governments, ordinary citizens, the schools have copies, the real estate people, we give them a huge amount, and when they have prospective buyers who want to know about the community, this is an excellent source to learn about that. We distribute it sort of all over. And we're constantly being asked. Jan in her house has a box that is gradually getting less and less in the box of these because people keep asking for this through the year. Before we leave this topic, I would like to give a shout out to the people who give us the information. These are the workers in the city and county governments, the school districts, and other agencies that are included in this pamphlet. They are the ones who gather the information, get it to us in a timely manner, and then Marlis Barbosa of our league puts it together and produces this wonderful little flip chart booklet. So,
now tell me why, you know, one thing people would say is, look, this is 2011, a flip chart booklet. This is the kind of information you could post on your website, readingleagueofwomenvoters.org. What's your website?
Our website is reading.ca.lwvnet.org.
That's a complicated one.
I know. But you could go to LWV Reading.
And so why should this be in a pamphlet form like this?
Because it's handier and you can flip through it. You cannot flip through pages very easily on the internet. Sometimes people just want to see what's going on, and it's easy to do what we just did, and that is flip through it and take a look. Oh, pie charts. Oh, terms of office. You know, when all the elections are and that kind of thing. Also, you can write notes in it.
And paperclip pages.
Yeah.
star, your circle, guy. He's the one I need to talk to. You know, one thing that's going on, the League of Women Voters on a statewide basis has been very involved in the Citizens Redistricting Commission. They're going to be reapportioning Assembly, Senate, congressional districts. They're going to hold their first of dozens and dozens of public hearings Saturday in Reading. We're going to have some guests in the 8 o'clock hour talking about that. The League locally... do you guys do anything with redistricting, and are you planning on doing anything different with this public process this year that actually Shasta County is holding?
Well, it's all the arrangements have all been made by other people. The California League was either the author or an author of that initiative that passed, it's given rise to these public hearings. And so all that we're doing as a league here is just encouraging people to go, because redistricting, you know, can decide the next election. Very important.
It certainly can. I'm a very amateur map buff, and was playing with some different maps, and believe it or not, you could actually get Shasta County into a Democratic district if you were, you know, if you were a scheming, you know, politician. They used to do that, but now this is this independent panel. They don't have, it's not being drawn by the legislature, who have a bit of an interest.
No, but some of the people are appointed, and the people who appoint them do have an interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I just make a quick comment about
yes.
Democrat, Republican California? Southern California and Coastal California, well, Coastal California has been traditionally pretty darn Democrat. Central California Interior has been traditionally pretty Republican. I don't know that the general public really has recognized this trend, but there is a trend where the interior California is becoming more Democrat and coastal California is becoming more Republican.
Really?
Yes. And so one of the theories as to why that is has to do with people who are retiring from the coast and moving to the interior.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's nothing that's going to change elections dramatically in the next few rounds, but it is definitely a trend. It's been going on for probably 6-8 years.
Yep. Interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, people do move, and people
and they take their values with them, whatever they are.
Yes, they do. We're running up to the top of the hour. Hey, Jan and Emily, thanks so much for being with us from the League of Women Voters.
Thank you.
More to come on the second hour of Free Fire Radio on KCNR Shasta Reading.
Good morning, Reading, Shasta County. This is Bruce Ross filling in for Carl and Linda Bott, who are at an undisclosed location today. You are listening, though, to Free Fire Radio. Today in the 8 o'clock hour, what time is it, Bob? 8:05. And in this hour, we're going to be talking about the Citizens Redistricting Commission. It's a it's an experiment in government that we're launching for the first time. On Saturday, the commission will be holding the first of many, many public hearings up here in Reading, and then they're going to be traveling across the state. And kind enough to join us today is Stan Forbes. I think he's what passes for Far Northern California's member of the commission. He is from Yolo County. Stan Forbes, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Tell us, you're an average citizen who's listening to this show. You know, you vote, but what is this redistricting commission? It's a little hard to get a handle on for some people. What do you hope to do in Reading?
Well, okay, here in the past, every 10 years, the census is taken. And as a result of that census being taken, all the political lines for the various assembly members, state senators, congressional districts have to be moved so that the population remains roughly equal. Well, actually pretty close to being equal. In the past, it's always been done by the politicians. And they've drawn the lines in the past basically to protect incumbents.
Good old gerrymandering. We all learned about it in school.
That's right, exactly. And it's done through gerrymandering, and there are some districts are fine, but some districts look very strange. Well, because of their shape. They look like a salamander, and that's where the term came from. There was a district that was long and thin back in the 1800s, and it got the name gerrymander because the guy's name was Jerry. Anyway, in 2008, a measure was put on the state ballot, Prop 11, that said, we don't want this anymore. Rather than have the politicians pick their voters, we want the voters to pick the politicians. And the only way we can do that is to try and make this into the lines be drawn by sort of a neutral panel of citizens rather than politicians. And so they created this commission. And then in last November, under Prop 20, the congressional seats were added as well.
It started with the state legislature and added Congress?
Exactly. I mean, Prop 11 was just the state legislature, but Prop 20 added the congressional seats as well. And so there's a big, long process, and at the other end, 14 citizens from all over the state, all ethnicities, roughly equal in gender, were selected to draw the lines.
Now, there's some skepticism always about, you know, oh, they're neutral. Well, who's neutral? What makes you guys so neutral?
Well, that was one of the primary criteria in picking us. Anybody who was part of the central committee, anybody who had been politically very active, was cut out for a variety of reasons. If they'd worked for the legislature, if they'd given too much money to campaigns in a certain period of time, there was a whole variety of things that they used to cut people out. Then the state auditor's office, which was the group that did the vetting, went through, and their primary criterion, besides technical skills or background, was your ability to be open-minded and even-handed and fair.
So that, and then there's a long process. It's not like you're just going to come out of a room one day and say, here are the new maps.
Oh, no, it's a very long process. We have, I think it's 67 meetings in the next 3 or 4 months. We're going to have a set of meetings. We've divided the state into 9 districts or 9 regions by population. And we will go to each one of them first in the next several weeks, actually, and ask people for input as to what are their communities of interest. What things should we be thinking about as we approach the lines, drawing the lines? Then we'll come back and we'll draw a set of lines. And we'll use the census data and what the public has told us in the past. Then we'll go back out and we'll say, here are the maps. Here's our first draft. What do you think? And we'll get the public comment on those maps. We'll come back. We'll draw another set of maps. We'll go back out to public again. And we'll say, what do you think about this? We'll get more input from the community. Come back in, draw a final set of maps. And I think we'll adopt them on the 26th of July because we have to give the public 14 days notice before our final meeting where we actually vote on them. And they must be approved by August 15th. So I think our operative date is July 26th to have the final maps.
Which is coming up soon. I think we're going to be needing to go to a break. Of course, the commission is going to be taking input from citizens on Saturday, but if you're listening now, want to give us a call, offer your own informal input into what the political districts should look like, give us a call, 605-4567, and we'll be right back after this break.
40 degrees downtown, full weather report coming up right after this on KCNR. This is Free Fire Radio.
Joe.
813 on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, and scattered showers this morning and then isolated thunderstorms this afternoon. Could see some hail. High should be about 54 degrees. Tonight, more scattered showers and thunderstorms. That tapers off late this evening. Looks like it'll be partly sunny for your Friday. Always be on the sunny side of life. Right now, 43 degrees. Weather report. Always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Now back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
And good morning, and we are here with Stan Forbes. He is a member of the Citizens Redistricting Commission, which is responsible for drawing the new Senate, Assembly, U.S. Congress districts for the next decade. Instead of, and they will be meeting, I'll repeat, Saturday afternoon, that's at Shasta College at 2 p.m. I think they're there from 2 to 5 in the 2100 building. I think it's room 2158. Mr. Forbes, some have described the maps as they exist today as like, drunken snakes.
Some of them are.
there's one, it's not quite that it's cut in half at high tide, but it's close along the coast. And of course, up here in our district, there's actually some pretty local history. Dick Dickerson was an assemblyman. He's now a city councilman in Reading. He was an assemblyman a decade ago and kind of got sideways with I think his the Republican caucus in Sacramento. And the next thing you knew, they shifted the district to include part of Nevada County for the first time ever, including the home of then-Assemblyman Sam Onestad, who primarily so that they could run against each other for the Senate seat. And sure enough, that was the end of Dickerson's career in Sacramento. That's the kind of a sign of the manipulation that the commission's avoiding?
I don't know if we're going to necessarily avoid it, but it won't be manipulated to have that result. We know it could have the same result, but it won't be manipulated that way. We can't take into account where the current members of the legislature live, nor can we take into account party registration. But I've heard other stories like that, where someone gets on the wrong side of the caucus, and when it comes time to draw the lines, they cut out the offending party, and that won't be allowed. I mean, we're not going to do anything like that.
So
we're going to we have six criteria.
What are those criteria?
Well, the criteria are the U.S. Constitution, the Voting Rights Act, then it's communities of interest, that they're contiguous, that they're compact, that to the extent we can, that they respect geographical boundaries and political boundaries.
Now, so a geographical boundary would be a river or mountain range?
It could be a river. It could be a freeway. I mean, something that divides the community. But like, for example, we had a woman email us complaining or expressing concern about her community of Whittier. So Whittier is a town of about 85,000 people south of Los Angeles. I think it's south of Los Angeles. And it had been cut up into three assembly districts. And they thought that was really, not the way to run a railroad. That they ought to have, they were a community of interest and they ought to be represented by an individual. So we want to avoid situations like that.
One thing I've heard about it, and maybe it doesn't matter, will the assembly, there's 80 assembly districts. And
correct.
There are 40 Senate districts. So in
correct.
Theory, you could match them up so there will be two assembly districts that nest in each Senate district. Is that a goal? Because now they're all over the map.
Prop 11 says, that's called nesting. Mm-hmm. And Prop 11 says we should nest them to the extent we can, because you may have a situation where nesting would result in a Voting Rights Act violation. And so you couldn't do it, but that is one of the goals to do, and then the idea is to then take 20 assembly seats, because we also have to do the Board of Equalization seats, of which there are four, and the idea is to put 20 assembly districts in each one of those. But again, that's our goal, but we do run up against the Voting Rights Act, and that may affect our ability to do that somewhat.
Now, how does the Voting Rights Act come into play here?
Well, the Voting Rights Act essentially says that you cannot dilute minority votes in a way that they are not able to elect a person of their choice. For example, if you combined a minority community into one district and they had a 50% ability to vote or a 55% ability to vote, they would have the opportunity to elect someone of their choice. But if you split those into two 25s, so they only represent 25% of two districts, they effectively could not do that, and so we have to be sure that we're not doing that. Like on the other hand, and then this makes it sort of an interesting project for us, if you will, is that you can't do what's called packing, which is put all the minorities into one district so they don't have any influence around them where they might otherwise have influence. So we sort of have to balance the two.
Now this might be a naive question, but if you just ignored ethnicity altogether, wouldn't that be neutral and you'd sort of go by geography and the chips fall where they may?
Well, that may be true, but that's not what federal law says. in an alternative universe, or alternate universe, that might be true, but that's not the political landscape we're operating under.
Well,
the law.
Going back, to the 40s and 50s and the Jim Crow era, of course, that's where the Voting Rights Act, Rights Act comes out of, and they were, deliberately trying to prevent people from, black people from voting in particular. I mean, is there a history of that in California?
Well, back in the, and again, this is almost before my time, which is a long time ago, the Justice Department or the Congress determined that there were four counties in California to which the Voting Rights Act would apply, which what that means, they're called Section 5 counties. And what that means is that before you change the lines, in the county, you have to get pre-approval by the Justice Department to be sure that you're not violating the Voting Rights Act. And then there's Section 2, which is the one that requires you to sort of affirmatively create districts if you can.
So you don't just have to shop your maps around the public. You have to send them to Washington, too, and get them approved there?
Yeah, exactly. They have to be pre-approved.
And you can do that in 3 months?
We're going to do it.
We're going to have to take a break. We're talking to Stan Forbes of the Citizens Redistricting Commission. If you have your own thoughts about what redistricting, give us a call, 605-4567.
820 on KCNR 1460. This is Free Fire Radio. 823, this portion of the program brought to you by Tobacco and Brew at 2143 Hilltop Drive. That is the home of Espresso Joe's and the big walk-in humidor. Tell you what, it's going to be kind of a cool day, so why don't you head on down there, have the T&B Sweeties make you one of their excellent espresso drinks. They are big supporters of the community down there with Joe and Shelley. 2143 Hilltop Drive, Tobacco and Brew. Now back to our guest host, Bruce Ross.
Have they not pulled the plug on me yet? I keep expecting Carl burst in the door and say, get off my radio
station. If they've got broadband, they're probably listening to your every word and taking notes. There will be a review
seriously
later.
Seriously biting their nails. Hey, we're here with Stan Forbes at the Citizens Redistricting Commission. Mr. Forbes is you're from Yolo County, is that correct?
That's correct.
So you're as close as we always feel a little bit neglected up here in Shasta County by the rest of the state. There's just not quite enough of us. But you're the Northern California representative. Is that fair to say?
Well, we like to think that we represent the whole state, but I think I do view myself as the person who represents Northern California. Be sure that the rural areas or the less populated areas of the North State, get an opportunity to participate in the process.
Do you have a sense of maybe how this is different in how this process will play out differently in a rural area versus Los Angeles or the Bay Area?
Oh, I think so. Because of the lack of population density, big area. The district will be much larger, and so you won't worry about if you're going to move something 3 or 4 blocks. You move something 3 or 4 blocks in Los Angeles, you may involve 10 or 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to be the case in the north part of the state.
The goal of the commission is to have an independent, neutral party doing this. But there has been some criticism from various quarters that already the commission is showing its liberal colors or favoring Republicans or favoring Democrats, particularly with some of the consultants you've hired. Do you have any response to that?
Oh, actually, I do. First of all, the 14 of us who serve on the commission, 5 are Democrats, 5 are Republicans, and 4 declined to state. I'm a declined to state. Well, what you find out, and I think that the process for selecting the commission really emphasized this, is that it's really 14 nonpartisans. I mean, it's really quite interesting to see that. But now, with regard to the two specific complaints that we've heard, sometimes you wonder if people ask about what actually happened before they take a position. One of the positions have been criticized was the hiring of Q2, which is our technical person who assists the commission in drawing the lines. Let me start by saying it's the commission that's going to draw the lines, not the technical consultant. That's an important thing to remember. But we essentially, and what the origin of the complaint is that Q2 has been alleged to be a, quote, Democratic firm. Well, in fact, the main person involved in the process is a declined estate and has never worked for either party. And she's very, very knowledgeable about census data. The complaint has come is that one of the minority owners of the company was a guy named Mr. Kane, who was a Democrat in 1980, who helped draw the lines in 1980. He now lives in Washington, D.C. He has been firewalled out of the process. The firm that we hired is a very nonpartisan firm. The other firm that applied is known as a Republican firm. I mean, and they just are. And if you look at their board of directors, there's a lot of prominent Republicans on their board of directors. But then the question comes, did we change the bid document in order to facilitate Q2 getting the bid? Well, and the assertion is made that, well, Q2 couldn't have qualified if they hadn't changed the document. And I discussed this 2 weeks ago with our executive director. And that simply is not the case. to use an arcane term, we started out with metropolitan statistical areas. They had to have done the work before, but they also had to have done it in a certain ethnic environment. Until we changed the bid specs, which were done so we hopefully get more people to bid, the Rose Institute, which is the other firm, would not, none of their experience would have qualified. They would not have qualified at all, whereas the one we hired would have qualified. So, in fact, changing the bid specs made the Rose Institute qualify. So I think that, I mean, that the complaints about the change in the bidding are misplaced, and the fact is that the firm that we hired is a completely nonpartisan firm. Then there's been discussion about our law firm. Well, it's interesting because at the time we were vetting the law firms, this is Gibson Dunn out of Los Angeles, the complaint was that this was a Republican firm.
Right.
In fact, they have their two senior partners, one's Democrat, the other's Republican. In fact, Mr. Kulke, who's the Republican, was involved in writing Prop 20. So I find it very, almost, you know, it's interesting to have the Republicans, and that's where the complaints are coming from, complain about the law firm, when in fact it was the Democrats who complained about the law firm initially. So maybe the fact that there's, you know, that both sides are complaining, it gives you a pretty good idea that the firm, you know, is okay.
And if I remember correctly, it was largely the Democrats who were complaining about the initiative in the first place.
Oh, absolutely.
Trying to scrap
absolutely.
The commission because they're the majority in the legislature and would be able to do this job for themselves otherwise, right?
That's right. And it also was the Democrats who fought Prop 20 about changing the congressional seats. They did not want the commission to do the congressional seats.
Well, Sam Forbes, I really appreciate your time today. One more time, Citizens Redistricting Commission will be meeting on Saturday at 2 to 5 p.m. at Shasta College in Reading. They'll be taking public input about what your communities of interest are, where do you like to see districts look like, and should join them. Your time to make your voice heard.
Thanks very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Coming up on Fox News at the bottom of the hour, this is Free Fire Radio.
Park Health Resort.
On the home of Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, 43 degrees downtown. This portion of the show brought to you by BNT Satellite. Don't call the 800 number. Doug Tooley down there, he is quite the satellite installer. I've known him for years. He is your dish network provider, and he'll help you set up a beautiful home theater system. Who can afford to go to the movies anymore, you know? So check him out, BNT Satellite. Don't call the 800 number at their new home on Liberty Street in Reading. That's BNT Satellite on the web, readinghdtv.com. Now back to our guest host, Bruce Russ.
And Carl still has not come back and hogtied me and thrown me out into the street. This is Bruce Ross filling in for Carl and Abbott. They are at an undisclosed location for the balance of the week. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking today about the Citizens Redistricting Commission. They are the newly formed, the voters of California in 2008 and then again last year decided that we no longer wanted to have the state legislature drawing its own political districts and those for Congress, as they say, having the politicians pick their voters instead of vice versa. Instead, this big, very good government idea, let's have an independent commission of very neutral citizens draw the maps, and that way we'll keep the politics out of it. Well, of course, let's be honest, it's a very political process, and the stakes are very high. So it's drawn a lot of attention, and it's drawn some complaints. One of the person with some criticism is Tony Quinn. He's a political consultant and a student of California politics. He's been involved in past redistrictings from decades ago, and he's been around in California politics for a long time, editor of the California Target Book. Tony Quinn, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to.
Well, let's start off right off the bat. We just had Stan Forbes, who's one of the members of the commission, talking. But you've had some criticisms of their work. He stands by it. But what's the gist of your complaint?
Well, right from the start, the commission was told that they should hire for the very important job of drawing the lines and doing the Voting Rights Act work. That they should hire people from both sides. For the line drawing job, they rejected that advice. They hired a firm that has clear ties to Democrats. Doesn't mean that they could not do a good job, but it makes the Republican side of this issue very suspicious. This is a highly political process. It will determine the outlook and the makeup of the legislature for the next 10 years. We just found out last evening that the Voting Rights Act firm that they hired has given more than $1 million in campaign contributions, 70% of those to Democratic lawmakers. It's a large international firm that's a lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. The commissioners apparently hired this firm without even knowing this. And I think there's been some really sloppy staff work. I think that they have simply failed to understand that they're in a political process, even though they're supposed to try to take politics out of it as much as they can. And they really needed the confidence of both sides of the political spectrum that they were going to approach this in a fair manner. And as of right now, that confidence simply is not there.
Now, let me ask you, sometimes I look at these processes and I say, well, gosh, anybody who's got the interest and the experience and is qualified is probably going to have a political background of one kind or another. Is it possible to find a neutral advisors?
Well, it is, but they chose not to include him. One of the people that had applied for the commission that was on the final list was a man by the name of Paul McCaskill, and he is quite well known in the redistricting business because he was the Supreme Court special master in the district lines that the Supreme Court drew in 1973 and 1991. Those district lines were universally praised. They truly allowed the voters to decide who the legislators were. There was big back and forth between the parties under those plans. They had a chance to hire him on their staff, and they declined to. Instead, they hired as their main line drawer somebody who has never drawn a statewide plan in any state. And they turned down the opportunity to include among the line drawers a company, largely because it had Republican ties, that had actually done work at the statewide level.
This is the Rosen Institute?
So it is very hard to find people that do not have some tie. But in the case of this one individual, they actually had a person with no ties who had done the job before, who had done a spectacularly good job, and they still did not want him to help them out.
I think one of the things Stan Forbes just said is, look, we're going to be, you know, the advisors, they're offering advice, they're offering, you know, information and technical expertise, but it's the commission that's drawing the lines. And, of course, it is balanced between Democrats and Republicans and decline the states, and there are these sort of supermajority requirements that everybody kind of has to, for a strong consensus. I mean, plus, it's the maps will all be public and sort of openly vetted. I mean, do you think that process over time will kind of take care of some of these concerns?
Well, it might. Let's hope that it does. I do believe that they are trying to do most everything in public. The fact they're coming to Reading now, that's their first public hearing, that's a good thing. I'm happy that they're having a lot of hearings, although they're not having them in some of the more important parts of the state where you have some real redistricting issues. That shows again that they don't really have the expertise in the whole statewide picture. When Mr. Forbes says about they're going to draw the lines, that's kind of nonsense. They are people that were chosen because it did not have a political past. None of them have ever been involved with this process, and they seem to take the attitude that they don't want to know how it works, that they resent people telling them that they really don't understand it. But the fact of the matter is that they don't. It's not only highly technical because you have to make all the districts exactly the same size, but it also involves the Voting Rights Act, which is very important in this state, especially in the southern part with the large Latino vote that is down there. There are great complexities because the coastal parts of the state have lost population. The interior parts have gained. The representation should shift from the coastal parts to the Central Valley and to the Inland Empire. They don't understand how that is going to be done or should be done, and they really should have experts on their staff who have done that kind of thing in the past, who have actually drawn statewide district lines, and they simply do not have that.
Tony Quinn, I want to talk more about some of the changes the state's going to be seeing right after this break. Stick with us. KCNR 1460.
842, 43 degrees. This is Free Fire Radio. KCNR, the home of Free Fire Radio, back once again with our guest host, Bruce Ross.
And we are back with Tony Quinn, longtime California political consultant. We're talking about this redistricting process that is going on. Of course, there's going to be a public hearing Saturday in Reading, first of dozens around the state. But, Tony Quinn, you were saying before the break there that the commission was not going to some of the places where there are redistricting, complicated redistricting issues. What are some of those areas, and what are those issues?
So quickly, and then talk about your areas. They do not have an early hearing scheduled in Stockton, San Joaquin County. This county was divided up such that the county has 600, almost 700,000 people, and it has no congressman, no senator, and no assembly member that lives in the county. Their representation was completely fractured in the plan that the legislature did in 2001. That should be one of the first places that they go to. So my problem is I don't think they understand where the real redistricting problems are. Now, looking at the map, and I actually have it right in front of me here, Shasta County and your counties that run that run up and down along Interstate 5 were constructed in the court master plan of 1991, and they were done in a pretty a sensible way. And what you I think you want to tell the commission members when they are there is that you should be kept more or less the way that your districts are. Your districts do not have a major growth issues. You've grown at about the same rate that the state has. You do not want a plan that, say, connected Reading with Eureka that went over the mountain ranges. I don't think the commissioners understand, although I do, how hard it is to drive from the Central Valley over to the coast. That, you know, you have nothing really in common with the coast. You should not be combined with them. You have within your own area, you have hospital districts, you have natural transportation corridor, you have the same water issues, and I hope that you'll have community leaders at the hearings on Saturday that will stress to them that you are the perfect example of a community that should not be divided up the way Stockton was 10 years ago, and that basically they should understand that when they look at a full community like yours, you should be kept together as far as your representation goes.
What do you make? You know, this is something I've actually written about. If you were connecting, say, Shasta County with the North Coast, they do have a lot of common interests. If you want to talk about the economy and whatnot, one other thing it would do, because this is a pretty conservative area and that's a pretty liberal area, you might actually get a more balanced, politically competitive district. Is that something that, you know, that was something that was sold as the reason for the redistricting commission, but now they're sort of turning around and saying, well, it's not actually part of the criteria. Can you explain what's going on there?
That's a very interesting question, because I'm a big believer that the whole process ought to be to create competitive seats. That's the reason for this process. They don't seem to quite understand that. And I do think in many parts of the state that you can achieve that. I just think that when you look at the North Coast, the economy, the transportation corridors, the media coverage, that is kind of one community of interest, and that your area is also one community of interest. So while you would have the opportunity, clearly, if Eureka and Reading were in the same district, it would be a pretty marginal seat. There's no question about that. There'd be a lot more competition between the two parties. But then you would give up what is the natural communities of interest that you have. Now, if you have people that want to go to them and argue before the commission that we really believe in political competition. We really should be tied in with the coast. And I can remember when I first came here a very long time ago, when Randy Collier was the state senator. I'm pretty sure he had the Redding area because he came from just north of you. His district ran all the way down the coast to Santa Rosa. So you have had, it was a very competitive seat. As a matter of fact, Ray Johnson eventually won that seat. You have to ask yourselves whether that is what you want. What I really think is important is that the commission hears from people in your area, that they understand what your needs are when it comes to drawing these lines.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that after break. We are talking with Tony Quinn, a longtime political consultant, about the upcoming state redistricting and what it might mean to Shasta County, rest of California.
This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop on Athens Avenue. Discounts for veterans. It is man's last stronghold. They will shave around your ears, shave your neck, all those things that good barbershops do and you don't find so much anymore. You'll never see Oprah on the TV screen down there. That is Cypress Square Barbershop, Athens Avenue, man's last stronghold. Check them out. Go get a real haircut. You're listening to KCNR 1460 Free Fire Radio.
It's back by Pop.
No, I won't back down.
8:54 on Free Fire Radio, 43 degrees, and checking the weather real quick. It's going to be isolated showers today. Thunder showers possibility this afternoon. Hail, depending on where you're at. High should be about 54 degrees. And then the winds should be calm, 40% chance of rain. That'll taper off tonight. Still some thunderstorms likely. The low getting near 37, and as I said, currently 44 degrees. This weather report brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards off of Highway 44 at the Inwood Drive exit. Check them out. It is a beautiful place, excellent cuisine, and just spectacular scenery. That is Anselmo Vineyards. Now back one more time for our guest host, Bruce Ross.
And we're back with Tony Quinn, longtime political consultant. We're talking about the upcoming state redistricting. Tony Quinn, you were mentioning before the break that, the districts that the way they're drawn up north here have shifted over the years. They've included the coast. They've included the Sacramento Valley. If I'm not mistaken, Mike Thompson, who's now the congressman from the coast, used to be the state senator for the Redding area, including Shasta County, but he never moved, but the districts have just wobbled. And so
yes, that's true, but that was in the state senate, and that district still sort of exists. That was prior to the courtmasters, I think, because Jim Nielsen was the state senator at that time also, and he's now your assembly member.
He is.
So there definitely has been some districts that have taken parts of the coast and parts of the upper valley. How you deal with Lake County, Napa County, that kind of thing sort of decides where some of these districts go.
Looking at the bigger picture and the whole state, you know, the big census numbers were that inland California, Riverside and San Bernardino counties, Placer County, the San Joaquin Valley saw the biggest growth. And of course, the Hispanic Latino population grew a lot over the past decade. How do you see, without knowing what the lines are going to look like yet, how do you see those shifts playing out in the legislature and in Congress, and how might California's political representation look different?
Well, I can tell you more about Congress because I've actually looked at the maps and looked at the numbers. The Bay Area should lose one congressional district. It simply does not have the population. That district should be shifted probably to the Sacramento-Stockton area somewhere in that region. In Southern California, the Riverside, you just mentioned, the Inland Empire, Riverside, San Bernardino, that is now 1 million people over. So they should get a new state senate seat out there in the desert somewhere. They should get a new congressional seat there and some new assembly representation. Those are areas of very high Latino growth. A fair plan would attempt to create additional Latino representation there, especially throughout Southern California. There are opportunities to increase Latino representation that should occur because of the tremendous growth. So we will see. But you can already see now, and there are sample plans floating around, kind of what a really good plan would look like for the entire state.
Now, generally speaking, the inland areas are more conservative than the Bay Area, certainly. But also, generally speaking, you said there, you know, might be more Latino seats. Generally speaking, you know, Latinos tend to vote more liberal. I mean, how does that? Is it going to be more conservative, more liberal? Too hard to say.
The seats that they create, that the new ones in the Inland Empire and in the Central Valley, are going to be much more politically competitive. I think that if they put a seat into Stockton, it's a very competitive place. It's very marginal politics. Both parties can win the area. That is probably true in parts of the Inland Empire. We have a highly gerrymandered plan now that favors both parties in their areas of strength. And a fair plan will break that down and will lead to more seats that are drawn based on communities of interest. And that should lead to more competitive seats.
Now, is that, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger in particular tried to kind of sell the idea that if these seats were more competitive, you might get a legislature that was more flexible, less in their partisan boxes. At the same time, people who are politically not safe are easy to pressure, and that can work both ways. I mean, do you think that will change the dynamics of the legislature much?
I think that it can. I think that what you've got now is the legislators know they're in very safe seats. Once they're elected, they really don't have to pay attention to their constituents except to respond to those on the extremes. And since they are nominated in primaries that were closed, they're going to be open now, all the legislators do on the Democratic side is respond to the public employee union.
Tony, unfortunately, we are hitting the top of the hour, and they're going to bump us off the air. But hey, I appreciate it so much.
Glad to do it.
This has been Bruce Ross, subbing for Carl and Luna Bott. Thanks so much for the opportunity. Thanks so much for listening. Free Fire Radio.
KCNR Shasta Redding.